What is up, everybody? This is Toffee Blues USA. I am Jerry again. I continue to be Toffee Blues USA, your source for all things Everton, American style. So yeah, I'm Jerry. I'm based out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Joining me today, he's been described as the sultry American accent on the Blue Room podcast. I don't think I just can't even do like a cool voice when I talk to this guy. It's just a very smooth voice. Rob Vera is joining us. Pretty great guy, and I've been looking forward to this for a long time. So, Rob, thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, you bet, Jerry, man. I'm glad to do it. Glad to be on an Everton podcast with people who know how to actually speak the language. So, you know, just kidding. That's the whole sultry American accent thing is just because I don't really have a sultry American accent, but I think that I'm on podcasts with people from a very specific part of the world on the Blue Room who, for whatever reason, they will ask me at times to just repeat words I've said because they find it to be a novelty. I imagine it's what, like if you grew up in a small town or a suburb and there was like one English kid in the class, everyone was really fascinated by him or whatever. I don't know why, but they seem to occasionally just get a kick out of the way I say certain words. So that's where that comes from, I promise.
Yeah, I remember when I was in college and I had some friends, I'm from North Carolina, right? And so I had some friends from Jersey and I was visiting them in Jersey, their family and everything. And their entire family surrounded me and was like, hold on, where'd you say you're from? And I was just like, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And they're like, what? North Carolina? You know, and it comes out every once in a while. You know, my Southern accent will creep out, especially if I'm talking to like my family members from like the country, you know, the country counties surrounding. So it just kind of comes out. It's a little bit different than you with the Scousers and our buddies over there. Where are you based in Merca?
In America, I'm based in Oklahoma City. Right. I've lived in Oklahoma so I'm from the Dallas-Fort Worth area originally in Texas, but grew up there, but went to college at the University of Oklahoma starting in the late 90s and just ended up staying here and moved to Oklahoma City in 2005 and have been here ever since.
Wow. So this is not a written down question. This is improvised. But sure. Oklahoma City, I've never known anybody from there. Give me a quick pitch for living in Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City is one of the best small big cities in America, I would say. It's definitely one of those places that especially over the last, you know, 10 years or so has gotten to be a cooler place to live. We've got, we've had a really good NBA basketball team now for, you know, a good 12 years or so in terms of just having a relevant competitive product. And, but, you know, just in terms of the city's growth and the way in which art and food and culture and sports have all kind of taken that next step up here. It's been nice, but it's one of those places that has a lot to offer, but yet the pace is really good. I mean, I'm never going to really complain about traffic having come from Dallas originally or having family from New York. So it's definitely a way of living in a city without feeling like you live in a really oppressive city urban environment, I guess. So,
So you're getting a lot of cultural opportunities.
More than you would think. Yeah, more than you would think in Oklahoma City. I don't know what people probably think of Oklahoma City. I'm not sure what I thought of Oklahoma City. I didn't really think much about it when I was in college, even though I went to school at the University of Oklahoma, which is about 25 minutes away from Oklahoma City. But I didn't come up here that often. But the city's definitely gotten a lot cooler over the last decade and a half or so.
Nice. Are you one of those folks sort of like myself that tend to watch the match solo in your house, or are you one of those who meets up with a supporters group and enjoys the camaraderie, or do you do a little bit of both?
Yeah, well, obviously, in a pre-COVID world, I would make an effort to meet up with the Everton OKC group, here in the city. I will freely admit, have not been as avid a match goer over the years. I think they've made it so easy to watch it at home. And then part of it, too, is that when it's that early in the morning, sometimes, you know, for us, it's a sometimes like the derby was a 6:30 a.m. start. Most, you know, typical 3 p.m. local time matches over in Liverpool are 9 a.m. here. And so it doesn't always lend itself as well to that as I'd like, but Everton does have really good, but surprisingly a nice little tight knit group. And I think possibly even a slightly growing group of Everton supporters here in Oklahoma City, but obviously it's not the kind of numbers that the Arsenal, my favorite, group is the Sooner Gooners, who are the Arsenal group. And, which I think is just a great name, but them and the United, Manchester United group. Yeah. Yeah. So they're, but having said that, we may not be, it's kind of like, it's like a Tobias Funke Interested Development. There are dozens of us.
Dozens of us. Yes.
And I don't know if there are dozens, but there's at least a dozen. So I'll say that for sure.
I'm only hoping y'all are all wearing the cutoff jean shorts while you watch the matches. Just saying. It's it's so great. So your local support group is Everton OKC. I think that's what you said. I just want to make sure I gave a little shout out to that. And so anybody in the Oklahoma City area needs to be checking that out, assuming you feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, I know. It's a little harder these days, of course, but virtually, I know that they're on Facebook, they're on Twitter and so on.
Very cool. So how are you? And I have to ask this of like all of the American folk, how are you an Everton supporter?
Oh, how did I get into this mess? Okay. Well, honestly, it started with it really is a combination of both randomness and fate. And, you know, there's that expression about, people who are Everton supporters, you know, they're chosen because they were, oftentimes it's referenced to being, kind of born into it or once Everton has touched you. And, of course, after a lot of years of bad Everton, I've always said, where on the doll did Everton touch you? But I would say it's a combination of two things. One, randomness in that back in the early 2000s, so this would have been around 2004. And the reason I remember it so specifically is because that's the year Everton made a Cinderella run to fourth place and made it to the Champions League. And around that time, I was a big hockey fan. I grew up in the Dallas area, a big Stars fan. They won the cup on my 20th birthday. Really into hockey. And then around, I think it was 03, 04, they went through a labor stoppage or whatever. And so I suddenly had this really sport I was really passionate about that suddenly was gone. And I'd randomly come across, I've been listening to a sports radio station in the Dallas area that I've still listened to this day. I grew up with, and one of the guys on one of the shows there, who is ironically a Liverpool fan, had posted this blog, because this is back in the early 2000s, about, he'd started talking a little bit about following the Premier League, and he posted this blog post that was pretty elaborate about how to choose, if you're an American, how would you go about choosing a team, and kind of explaining to you the tiers of here, if you want a team that's, is going to always win, or a team that's a little more historical, but a little more challenging or whatever. Mm-hmm. I felt it was too easy to just pick at the time Arsenal, who were great, or United. Right. Because I'm a glutton for punishment, clearly. And I just thought, that's just too easy. And So I came across, I remember at first, I'm like, I came across Middlesbrough. I'm like, oh, that's kind of, they're kind of cool. And I'm like, no, didn't feel right. And then I came across Everton, and I don't recall exactly why, but I just started reading up on Everton a little bit. They'd had a few American players. Not that I really cared about that, but I thought, well, there's some entry portal here into them through that. And then I came to find out, and I was at the time working at a school called Oklahoma City University. So I work in higher ed. Now I work for a software company in higher ed. But before that, I worked in admissions at this school called Oklahoma City University in Oklahoma City. It's a small private school. The men's and women's soccer coach who had been there for a couple decades when I first started working there, and he recently retired in the last few years, is a man named Brian Harvey. He is from Liverpool and is the brother of the great Colin Harvey, former, you know, obviously Colin Harvey is part of the Holy Trinity and, you know, is one of the, you know, former manager and just this legend. And so I somehow got into a conversation with him and mentioned something about Everton, and he just, his eyes lit up and he talked to me about it. And then suddenly I'm like, this is a sign, you know, and I don't know that I really believe totally in signs, but I thought, ah, this is a sign. I've got someone here who's a local, he's from there, he's passionate about it. If I ever have questions, I can ask him. So back then it was just, all right, I'm just going to choose Everton. And I happened to choose them and when they were going through kind of a Cinderella run in 04, 05 to a, you know, top four spot. And it felt like every game was 1-0 and they were just barely eking these games out. And of course, I thought at the time, you know, the first season I ever watched Everton, they made it to the Champions League. And I thought, man, it's going to be like this forever. It's only going to go up from here. And so by then I was getting hooked into learning about the players and how the transfer window worked and why there's no playoffs in the Premier League and all these things. But more than anything, I think I just got sucked into the culture, the people. And really that's definitely what has kept me with Everton all these years. Obviously it's not been all the ridiculous winning, but it has been, there's something about the club that's great and the people that is so great. And I have made some of the very best friends of my life because of Everton. And so, yeah, that's how I got into Everton. It's a combination of, you know, I'm working at a place in the middle of America where the longtime legendary soccer coach just happens to be the brother of one of the greatest Everton legends ever. So, I mean, it's just one of those things that I felt like I was chosen and Everton touched me or whatever. And here I am.
That's such an awesome story, man. That's great. Yeah, it's weird how that's what I'm starting to find out is typically there is people have certain notions, certain things are drawing them toward potentially saying, okay, Everton's my team. And then there's some bizarre fate-based shove. You know what I mean? It's just very like, and that's, you know, that, I mean, that you are, oddly enough, not the same type of story, because yours is bafflingly fateful. You know, it's just such a good, yeah, that's really cool. You know, mine was very simple. I was trying to figure it out. And all of a sudden I was like, you know, I like Spurs a little bit. I really like Everton. It feels right. And then I watched Everton beat Spurs. You know, Jelovic just scores this amazing goal at the end of the game.
Oh,
and
yes.
Yes. Goal. And because I was like, I was on the fence. And I saw that and I was just like,
yeah.
Like it's like you can't not do it then, you know? Yeah. So
once you have that feeling, that's the thing about Everton is that they'll give you that feeling every once in a while. And so, and it, you can't forget it. It's like, sometimes like right now it's pretty great because this is the best we've ever been since I started following them in terms of just talent. I know it's an early start to the season, but you know, over the years, it's just been those kind of that Jelovic goal is a great example. The Fellaini goal against Manchester United years ago, where we won that game 1-0. And it was one of those things where they give you these moments and these tastes of this drug-like glory and you feel it. And then you're chasing that feeling for a long time. And it's, And sometimes it doesn't deliver, but yet all the other things about Everton beyond just what happens on the pitch keeps you sucked in. And it's never boring. They may be boring on the pitch, but there's always some drama surrounding the club and the players. And obviously social media has made, or as we call it, Everton Twitter is always constantly entertaining on some level. That's how I ended up kind of getting sucked into this whole world.
Yeah. So I do need to ask as well, how does Rob Vera, get in with the Blue Room?
Oh, yeah, it's honestly, Twitter was sort of the gateway drug to all of it. What started first was, just interacting over the years on Twitter about Everton with people, and occasionally it would just be replying to guys like Greg O'Keefe, who at the time worked at the Echo and now he works at the Athletic. Then Paddy Boylan and Matt Jones, just responding to them, and probably for years, just kind of being one of the many people who respond to them and not necessarily hearing back, but then occasionally they would reply or they'd favorite something or whatever. And we, just little tiny whispers of a conversation, nothing that significant. But over time, it's a weird thing how that relationship and that knowledge, even names that I now recognize as people who I've never met, but yet reply to me constantly, they start to be committed to your memory somehow. And so at one point years ago, I got asked by Greg O'Keefe when he worked at the Echo to write their weekly fan column, View from the Gladys. And I think that I can't remember if it was because someone had dropped out at the last minute or what have you, asked, are you interested in writing at all? I think he felt like from some of the stuff I posted on Twitter that I could write. And that's maybe debatable. I've written a bunch of Everton stuff over the years, but I've slowed down lately, and I do need to get back to it. But so I ended up writing it, and it was sort of a novelty that this American guy was writing and not sounding like, I guess, like a total idiot talking about Everton. And then even though I had a few people who were like, what do you know? You've never even been to a game. You're not even from here. What are you talking about? And strangely, that felt like it validated me. I'm like, oh, I'm getting under someone's skin. That must be good, right? But it was little stuff like that. And then it was, through those interactions on Twitter, suddenly a few of them follow me and then get asked to join a WhatsApp group with some of the guys who at the time wrote for the Everton Aren't We website and for, did some other stuff with the, at the time with the Blue Room. And then at a certain point, I guess it was finally in 2017, my brother and I planned a trip over to finally see. I'd planned to get over before. It never was supposed to take as long as it did. But if you're an American and you've ever been over there, it's not cheap to plan a trip over there. If you've got other bills to pay, you've got other things going on. Sometimes you have to just kind of make it happen. And I finally did. And Matt Jones, who I had at that point knew through Twitter, decided he would take the chance to meet up with my brother and I one night while we were over there, and we watched, I found out he was into the NFL, and we had a few beers and we just kind of hit it off. And then I eventually started to meet Paddy Boylan and Mike D'Ascia and obviously Dave Downey. And so it just sort of, I've now been over three times and spent more time than each visit than the last, and just continue to develop relationships through chatting. And honestly, doing podcasts is us having conversations really every single week, multiple times. I mean, I talk more to those guys than I talk to a lot of members of my own family, sadly, just the way it works. And yeah. So it really was just something that kind of built up organically over time. And I still find it odd to this day that I'm on the Blue Room, which has grown to become this pretty big, you know, in the Everton podcast world, this pretty big thing. And I'm still pretty much, I know the guys from the American Toffee podcast have guested on there before, but I'm pretty much the only regular American on there. And now I'm just sort of part of it. And I don't know how this happened. And I didn't mean for all this to necessarily happen, but I have to say that it is a good, you know, everyone needs their hobbies. Everyone needs their diversions. And it's become something that, you know, when I'm not doing my regular day job is a lot of fun. Even during the bad times with Everton, it's always been an interesting and compelling conversation. So that's kind of how I got brought into this world.
Very cool. Now it's for everybody out there who is hearing Rob mention these folks, pretty much it's almost like a who's who of Everton Twitter. You're like, oh, they have good opinions and they have good opinions and they're really smart and that's very interesting, you know what I mean? And so it's that group. For those of you who are somehow watching this and you haven't listened to the Blue Room, I just got to go ahead and say, give it a shove. You need to listen to them. Really, really level-headed folks who know the game and at the very least, bring like opinions that can be backed up, you know, which is really always refreshing. And if you disagree, you're like, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just going to say those guys have grown up with it since birth. Mm-hmm. They're season ticket holders. They're as plugged into it as anyone can be. And that's probably my value is being the guy who's the outsider who kind of sees the game and sees Everton through maybe a different lens. And that's what really like American fans, like that's, I think, where we do have something to offer to the overall conversation is that we grew up consuming professional sports in such a different way and it's a different paradigm. And so I think sometimes that adds some layers to the overall conversation, or at least I hope it does.
By the way, when I first got into this, I was absolutely obsessed with the transfer window, Rob.
Oh, yes.
I had had nothing like that in sports before. And there, I was like, oh, go to this website. It's a chat room. Oh, let's go to this forum. Oh, they have all the exclusive insider details. And I was ridiculous. And I'm admitting this, just saying, I'm not as into it as I used to be because I'm starting to be able to kind of see through a lot of the bullshit. And also there's not as many like leaked rumors now. I think it's a little bit different. There's not as much weird stuff happening.
Well, you know? It's the wild, like journalism over there is the wild, wild west. Really, I've always described it that way because, you know, like we pull up ESPN.com and there's a story and we just click on it and we're like, oh, they're reporting some facts about something that happened. Over there, you can't automatically assume any of that. No. And so over the years, I think my fascination with the transfer window is almost like the actual players who come into Everton is that's almost secondary to the game of it, the atmosphere of it, the chess match of it all, the do you believe this guy or this journalist from this publication or not? And really you learn over the years that there are only a handful of them that are definitely nailed on reliable. And, you know, to your point, it's since Marcel Brands has come in, frankly, the spigot has been shut off a little bit in terms of the information that gets out to the kind of what I used to refer to as the kind of the holy trinity of Everton journalism, Paul Joyce and Dominic King and Andy Hunter. I mean, now they still get some information, but it's other people who get it. And they don't get those three guys don't get everything they used to. And so you just sort of have to follow the breadcrumb trails at times, but it's weird that we have to exist that way. But you know, there's not, I think the closest thing to an Adrian, like a Woj or whatever, like that we have in Bass, like in the NBA here, or Adam Schefter in the NFL is Fabrizio Romano.
That guy is,
I don't know when he sleeps during the window. I swear he is tweeting, you know, at all hours. And yet he's been this particular window in the last couple, I mean, he's right most of the time. And so he seems to be on his game, but yeah, it's a crazy media atmosphere for sure.
I have it on reliable source here, man, that Fabrizio Romano is actually five dudes. He's five dudes.
He must
just saying. Yeah. He has to be. They all have sign in. It's fine. So last thing, I have to ask, I have to do this because I've been, you know, softly Twitter stalking you for years. I know you're a big time music guy. I know you talk about, I've seen you post about Spoon before, which is like this band's big, it's a big band for me and my wife. It's like one of our songs and stuff. Yeah. That I'm admitting that out loud. So we're talking about your enormous record collection. So I would ask you as a last thing, do you have a band, knowing zero or very little about me, a band that you could recommend to me that I probably haven't heard of, and you're like, you're gonna love this, man.
Oh boy.
I'm surprising you with this, I know, which is the point, but I was curious.
That you haven't heard of. Well, I will say, like, so much of my, so I host a weekly music show here in Oklahoma City on KOSU, the Spy FM, which is it's like 91.7, 107.5, but it's also all just on the internet. So you can just Google it and find it. But I also tweet about it. So if you follow me, you'll find it out. And by the way, Jerry, I can tweet something about Everton and get hundreds of, sometimes like I can get really fortunate with people getting super sucked into replying. I tweeted some random thing about after the derby the other day about Liverpool complaining about, you know, their treatment or whatever. And it got like all this engagement, hundreds of retweets. And I'm like, it sounds like humble bragging, but my point I'm trying to make is I wish I could get people into music that much. Whenever I talk about music, I never get that much excitement about it, comparatively speaking. But so anyway, most of my music focus week to week is on my show is a time specific, not a genre specific right. show. So it's 80s, 90s, and 2000s, that 30 year period that is pretty much the defining music period of my life. Having said that, when I get asked the question of who would I recommend, you know, a new band or whatever, I probably like, or a band that you haven't heard of, I would probably recommend, and I've posted about this a few times, a band that I just learned about this year, who right now have my favorite album of 2020, and they are called Nation of Language. And it's their full length debut that came out this year is currently my album of the year. And the best way I can describe it is that if you heard it today and you had never heard the album or heard of them and didn't know anything about, you know, who they were or what time period, you would think that this was a classic new wave synthy post-punk album from like 1984. And every song is awesome. There's not a weak song on it, but the name of the album is Introduction Presence. And it is like, it's one of those albums that my wife, who's definitely not as much of a music nerd as me. And if she was, then we probably wouldn't be married to each other. It's one of those ones that I randomly put on and she's like, this is really good. Who is this? You know, like it's just one of those albums that just really, really sucks you in. So that's probably the band that I'm going to bat for the most right now. And so Google them, Nation of Language. Gotcha. They're just an indie band out of Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So who knows where they're actually from? Maybe they are from Brooklyn, but I kind of doubt it. They sound like a, you know, if you're into New Order or Echo and the Bunnymen or the Depeche Mode, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, this will be right in your wheelhouse. So definitely recommend them. As far as Spoon goes, by the way, Jerry, I'll put that back on you. Spoon, I would argue, is a band that just refuses to make a weak album. They're all really good. Like there is no bad Spoon album, but if I had to put you on the spot and say you have to pick a favorite, What is your favorite Spoon album? Mine is Girls Can Tell.
Girls Can Tell. That's mine.
Yeah. No, whatever, Jerry. Don't just take mine.
No, I promise. I promise. That's the one I always go to lately. Oh. Like, that's the one, but it's not the first one that I got into.
Yeah, it wasn't my first one either that I got
into. The first one, I mean, I got into them late, like after that. So when Gimme Fiction came out, that was, you know, I turned my camera on and I was just like, you know, yeah. but that I Summon You song, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky enough to get to see them in Chapel Hill, Carrboro area. After it had been, I'd only been into them for like a month and they were coming. I was just like, you know, me and my wife got tickets and we're so psyched because we had this one song and she gets sick, couldn't go. So the most romantic thing I've ever done, the only romantic thing I've ever done, is when our song came on, I called her and put it up, had her listen to the music through the phone.
I like that you're framing it as romantic that you left your sick wife at home to still go to the concert.
That's all she told me to do.
Totally don't blame. Like, once you're married, you understand, like, look, they can be sick anytime. they're probably not going to die. They can probably take care of themselves, go to the show. Cause Spoon, you know, your wife's there every day. Spoon only comes around once every couple of years to your hometown. So you gotta go see him when you can. I totally get that.
I legit, it's funny that that's like the most romantic thing I've done.
Your own little John.
I may be kind of horrible now that I think about it, Rob.
It's dude, no, you made the right choice. Don't worry about it, man.
So very cool. So Nation of Language. We're looking that up.
I will check back with you in about a week and see what you thought of the album.
I'm excited. Like it. I'm excited to check that out. So we do need to get on to the football. Really quick, before I do that, I wanted to make sure that I welcome all the Liverpool supporters who are watching. We want to say thank you for watching and supporting our Everton fan channel. Really cool of you. I know you're probably wanting us to talk about the Derby. We're not going to talk about the Derby at all, so I'll give you a second to leave. Okay, cool. So we are now going to do a preview, or not a preview. What the hell, Jerry? We're going to do a little Derby review now. I lied because I was just hoping they would go away. But I really do appreciate them supporting us and giving us views. It's just sweet of them. So, for those of you who, didn't watch, if you don't want a spoiler, fingers and ears, earmuffs, but yeah,
you don't know the result by now. I'm sorry. That's
I feel
fault.
Really worried about you. but, 2-2 draw. And sadly there were no talking points at all. Derby, none at all. So actually, I mean, yeah, I literally have written down just a plethora of, if I'm quoting Three Amigos, so I've got some talking points. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to list some talking points, Rob, and I'm going to give you a choice where you want to go. Right. Just because I was like, I want to shake it up a little, see what happens. So main talking points for the Derby. Number one, I thought they looked sharp and incisive for long stretches during
this. Yes.
Mane and Salah goals both look pretty good.
Yeah.
No, pretty solid goals.
They're great players and they're going to great players score goals.
Yeah.
Even if you're, yeah. Yep.
Pickford tackle, Van Dijk injury, that happened. If you want to talk about that, it's up to you.
I feel like everyone's talked about that all.
Have they
written? I mean, my God.
Yeah. Keane and DCL goals. Thought those were also pretty sweet. Awesome. And he actually had more chances than just that.
Yeah.
Richarlison red card happened. Their celebrations were absolutely crushed by VAR at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. That was them awesome. Being on the other end of that as opposed to other times. I think it's safe to say we had some disappointing performances from certain players, but we also had some strong performances from certain players, which is really cool. There's a heck of a lot of talking points there, or your choice. So where do you want to go what are you into right now?
I'm gonna combine a couple of those. The first one you mentioned, how good Liverpool played, and then our performances as a whole, because they really are related. So I think one thing that we can absolutely acknowledge, and I sort of suspected this would happen after they lost 7-2 and they were humiliated and had to hear about it for 2 weeks, you know, during an international break. I really didn't want anything like that to happen, as much as everyone sort of enjoys any time, the rare moments where they have to actually endure any sort of setbacks or anything. Yeah. I certainly didn't want them to lose before they played us. But certainly didn't want them to lose the way they lost to us, yeah. Just because you can expect when you're talking about, because let's be honest, they are arguably, and maybe not even arguably, the best side in the world right now. And certainly in England, they're the champions. They won the Champions League the year before. I mean, they're really good. And so you had to expect a reaction. I think that they came out and were really sharp, and they looked exactly like the dangerous, high pressure, high intensity side that just doesn't let you breathe right from the get go. And It was a combination of that plus the fact that we didn't, I'm not saying that we weren't ready, but we just, I think it was a lot for us to cope with. And I think that Everton had, I think if Everton had played Liverpool the week after their Villa game, that it might have been better. Or when Everton were, because I think everyone going away for international break and stopping that momentum, and then guys traveling back long distances from South America, and you know, we don't totally know the extent of was Yerry Mina fully fit or not. No one really, you know, like it's all these, and then obviously that Seamus Coleman tried to gut it out, but he couldn't make it through. Allen and Richarlison were both coming back from their own, you know, things, but Allen especially. And so you got pretty much what I think you could argue is not an unsurprising performance from Everton, from the standpoint of not having that same crispness and sharpness that they'd shown in the first four games of the season. But what I do want to point out, and I think this is where you can take from this game a really encouraging sign about Everton taking that next step, is that you saw a side that went down 1-0 3 minutes into the game, and everyone had, I guarantee you can't, no matter how optimistic you've been or how happy you've been about Everton, you absolutely were feeling like, here we go again. You can't, because if you've watched this particular fixture, it's just impossible. You always feel like they always have the upper hand. They always have the advantage. The most encouraging thing to me was the way we responded. The fact that we were able to even it up. We didn't allow this to turn into an avalanche. We didn't, you know, hang our heads. And really, that's how we've been all season. And so I was really encouraged by just the response. The fact that we came back from a one goal deficit twice in that game. You can say what you want, obviously, about the VAR at the end, whatever. I'm not going to apologize for that. Mm-hmm. And anyone who asks you to is full of shit, because God knows those sorts of things have always gone against us. So don't feel bad when occasionally, a broken clock is right twice a day sort of thing, and we finally get a break. And so I was just encouraged that you have to kind of, I think you have to really stop yourself and remember what we're talking about here compared to this time only, 6 months ago, maybe, or when we did Project Restart or whatever. We're talking about an Everton who, if you want to critique players and, you know, moments here or there, you are still talking about an Everton side that are at the top of the Premier League after five matches and have not lost a game. Like, say that to yourself and sit there and just kind of drink that in and sit with it for a few minutes. I even when the words come out of my mouth, it's sometimes, it just feels like, is this real life? And so I am trying to live in the moment and really appreciate it. But I thought the derby was the best possible outcome, given that they played way better than us. We, by all accounts, probably deserve to lose that game just based on the performance and on the refereeing decisions and a variety of other things. But deserve isn't going to be factored into the final point standing at the end of the season. Historically, 50 years from now, if anyone remembers this game at all, they're probably not going to remember details, but they'll just see that it ended 2-2. That's all that's important, is finding a way, and Everton found a way. And now they come into a three-game stretch where they're past this first big monster, and now it's time to prove that this start wasn't a fluke. And so, you know, I talked about this with Dave Downey this morning on our podcast, our monthly podcast on the Blue Room that just came out tonight, called The Long Con, which where we do it once a month. But we talked about how big and pivotal this three-game stretch is. But I thought the Derby performance was grit and guts and hanging in there despite a lack of great performances overall, even though obviously guys like Calvert-Lewin and James Rodriguez and Luka Dean especially were awesome.
Michael Keane, my gosh.
Yeah, Michael Keane was – yeah, I mean, Michael Keane had the goal. He was good. I thought, honestly, the first goal they scored was just – I mean, it was just so awesome. But, you know, it was Coleman who kind of – got juked out of his shorts. But even their second goal, like, you know, Yerry Mina had been fine up until that point, and then he literally did the thing where he tries to block a shot, and it's like a hockey goalie. Yeah. If you watch hockey, the goalie will do an instinctual kick save.
Yeah.
Only it bounces to the wrong guy, gets right on his stick, and he shoots it past you. Well, when you do that against a guy like Salah or Mane, you know, those guys are two of the best in the world. They're going to, you know, and so I'm not trying to totally explain away Yerry Mina's that moment there. It's a mistake, but it's also like you're playing the best attacking force in the world. I mean, this is the kind of thing that will happen sometimes. So for Everton to find a way to gut that out was big. But no, Michael Keane was great. I think that James Rodriguez, if he is taking the corners, I said this earlier today, there's no reason that Yerry Mina and Michael Keane shouldn't score at a minimum 8 goals each this season. I'm just throwing that out there. You know, 10 is probably a bit much, but why not? Why not? That guy can put that ball anywhere he wants to, and those guys are just giants in the box. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think what impressed me, it continues to impress me about Michael Keane this season. I'm seeing more of it, it seems like. His downfield passing, the long balls he was playing consistently to the wings, and getting the ball forward. It's nice. It's really, and it's purposeful. It's mindful. It's not just what a lot of times, and it's actually going 2 feet or going to chest, and it's to our player. It's nice to see that, to see a big guy like that bringing that kind of game. You know, and it did seem like he dealt with challenges well.
Well, Michael Keane is a perfect example of what we all hoped we would get out of someone like Carlo Ancelotti, which is improving the players that we already had. You know, I mean, it's easy to just say, hey, new guy comes in, bring in 11 new players, but that's just not the reality. The reality is that, you know, Carlo Ancelotti has been tasked with taking, you know, average players and making them good, good players, making them great. And Michael Keane, now, you know, he's healthy now. I think Carlo Ancelotti fills those guys with more confidence than they maybe even have a right to have. You know, I mean, Michael Keane has physical limitations. He's not incredibly fast. He's not incredibly skilled. And there used to be a time where whenever he had the ball on his foot, I was like, oh, please just make a short pass and get rid of it, because they want him to have it. That's not the case. To your point, you're right, Jerry. I mean, like, that's the difference now, is I feel like Michael Keane suddenly is filled with confidence and he's trying longer balls, and suddenly, you know, and Yerry Mina has always been a good passer. And so it's one of those things where if you can have two center halves that can pass the ball and be comfortable with it, that really can change your fortunes overall, because then you're not having to just kick everything 60 yards down the field. So I Michael Keane's been very impressive this season so far. And generally speaking, everyone was worried about the doom and gloom of, you know, what happens if you lose Mason Holgate and Kenyari Mina and Michael Keane play together? And say what you want, but they have marshaled the defense that has, you know, that is undefeated in the Premier League so far this season. Yep. And then they've each contributed goals, and I think, and they've each had some really strong performances. And so I think that if you're too critical of either of them, I think you're really kind of barking up the wrong tree, because I think they've both been pretty good, you know, value for money all season.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Mina has the occasional lapse in concentration, but he's still, you know, I still think he's doing a good job, you know, for the most part. And he's had some games are better than others for him, frankly.
Sure.
Which is so true of working on consistency and concentration, and I feel like that's just. With a guy who's been injury prone in the past, I would just like to build him up and get him just a consistency with playing. And I feel like with that consistency of playing is going to come the concentration, going to come the communication and those instincts and knowing where you're supposed to be with other people on the field. You know, I think that'll help him a lot.
Well, and I think for all players, but especially, you know, and I remember when Michael Keane first came to the club and he had some major health issues too. And you know, he's had concussion and things, you know, guys like that, but it's true of most players, but especially I think defensive players who have to get into certain patterns and defensive rhythms and coordination and communication with each other. There's just no substitute for being on the pitch. And as much as you can argue about this player's skill set or talent more than anything else, like, I'm a huge Yerry Mina fan. I'm like the president of his fan club. I love him, but because I think I love his personality and I love the greater than the sum of his parts contributions to that to that dressing room and all these things. But I am the first to admit that the biggest thing he's got to prove is that he can stay on the field. And if he can't, you know, that's true of every player. You know, that's why Theo Walcott never turned into what a lot of people thought he would be over the course of his career, is that he couldn't stay healthy. Of course, then he comes to Everton and never misses time, as much as that drove me insane. You know, he's still a good guy, but you know, it's just one of those things. But there's just been elevations in performance across the board. Calvert-Lewin has certainly proven me wrong. I thought his ceiling was, you know, this, and it's certainly, and now he's found a way to be the best version of himself. And so, you know, and Richarlison has, I think, still scored one league goal so far this season. Right. And yet no one denies how important he is to things. Right. Like, what happens when he starts scoring? What happens when James Rodriguez fully gets to know this team? I mean, I think that that we don't fully understand what the ceiling for this particular iteration of Everton actually is yet, which is exciting.
Yeah, that James Rodriguez ball across the middle to the far post, Richarlison's diving for it, gets ahead on it, hits that left post. It was a beautiful play. And you know, we had some of those. It was one of those things where I feel like the first time when I watched that game, I was kind of like, oh, I'm so disappointed, you know? But then in hindsight, I watched it again today and I thought, you know, we had chances. They looked more like themselves. They looked more like the team we saw last year. As far as their decisive nature of their passing, they were so fluid. Their press was solid. They created a lot of, I mean, we had we didn't start playing the game until 15 minutes in, man. You know, we didn't wake up till 15 minutes. We had a beautiful run of play for about 5 minutes that resulted in a goal. And then right after that, we gave up a silly foul right just outside the box and gave them a chance. I think Alexander Arnold, the one who took the kick and Pickford made a good save. But it kind of sucked a little of our momentum away. Mm-hmm. But we had flurries. We had chances.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, I look at Richarlison had several chances on goal. DCL had several chances on goal.
Yeah.
It wasn't a game where we did that not in the face, not in the face kind of stuff. We've done before, you know. I do think still that we still need to learn, continue to develop on how to derby, you know, in terms of the emotion, and channeling that the right way, because we did slip up a couple times with that.
Yeah. No. Well, and look, when you've gone this long without winning this game, I mean, it's at a certain point you almost run out of ways to talk about it. I mean, you know, Everton just have to do it. They just have to find a way to win one of these games. And yeah. I think that will be the breakthrough, as obvious as that sounds, is they just need to find a way. Like, if Aston Villa can beat Liverpool 7-2, there's no reason that once in 10 years this team can't beat that. I mean, it's just been one of those things that has taken on a life of its own. But, you know, I'm still confident that at some point Everton will do it, but I'm not even really concerned. I said before the game, like, it's more important that Everton are good again than any single game. They're going to lose at some point, and that does not invalidate how good this has been. And if they'd lost on Saturday, I'd still say the difference, though, is that not just because Everton got off to a hot start, but it's the way they've won. It's the number of chances we've created. It's the goals we've scored. It's the way we've been resilient. This is so fundamentally different. The underlying characteristics of this thing are so far different than they've been in the past, where we were just hoping to score a goal and hold on, or get up 2-1 and hold on. There is no holding on with this group, right? You know, I mean, they don't act. I mean, don't get me wrong. Sometimes if you're up 2-0 with 10 minutes to go, you're trying to lock things down, but you're playing smart and sound defensively or whatever. But I think what I mean is that you can tell and you can sense this feeling when you're watching them, when they're just trying to hold on for dear life against a side. And right now, that's not what they're doing. They seem to be like, oh, the other team score, we're going to go score, and then we're going to go score two or three more. You've got to have that arrogant, you know, confidence, you know, that sort of skull crusher mentality that, like, this is mine and I want it, I'm going to go take it. And we just haven't had that from Everton for a long time. So that is what has been so encouraging. And when you have a transcendent figure like Carlo Ancelotti and a transcendent player like James Rodriguez, suddenly everything can change. And so I hope that this is the sign of more good things to come.
Yeah. I feel like we should give it 1 minute. 1 minute. 1 minute to address the red cards. Okay. 1 minute and we're done. I feel like we had to do it. I feel like we got to say, got to touch it because it happened. It was there. And so anyway, so what do you got?
Red cards. I mean, let's start with the easy one. Richarlison deserved his red for that tackle. I mean, he apologized for it afterwards. I mean, I think it was a pretty vicious tackle. I don't think that's characteristic of him per se as a player. But he's physical and he's intense and he made a rash decision. And, so now he's going to be out 3 games. Shit happens, you know, I mean, that's just how it goes. Jordan Pickford, it was a really reckless challenge, and I certainly would not have, you couldn't have complained if he had been given a red card and been booted from the game at that point. But by the letter of the rules, it was adjudged to be offside, and therefore the foul doesn't count. I mean, and again, they tried to explain all the technical aspects of it. But it shouldn't have, I don't think it was a red card personally, but I wouldn't have been able to argue strongly against it if they had given it to him. But again, I think the idea was that they don't award the red card because it's not a foul if it's offside or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever. That's kind of where I'm at. The bottom line is Everton definitely benefited from calls or lack of calls, or certainly the Henderson goal, which really may have saved Pickford's ass even more. I mean, Pickford is just so on the edge. He is, to me, is a huge liability for the team. I know he made some really great saves, but it's a zero-sum game to me when you're like that. Jordan Henderson goal was embarrassing.
Yes.
There's no way any standard level keeper should be letting that in. I would take – people argue all the time, well – you know, we brought this guy in at the transfer window, but is he really going to push Pickford for number one? I don't think the question anymore is about, hey, do we have an option that's as talented as Pickford? the question is do we have an option that is more steady and stable and predictable than Pickford? I've said for year, for a while now, I want a nice boring goalkeeper. Even if he doesn't make the spectacular save that Pickford occasionally makes. And that's why I refer to Pickford as a YouTube goalie. Like he makes some really spectacular looking saves. They don't make up for all of the boneheaded decisions and just the weird physical mistakes and the mental stuff that seems to get into his head. He drives me crazy. Now, having said all of that, this, you know, all the furor over him injuring, you know, Van Dijk, he certainly didn't mean to. I think it was a reckless challenge, but I don't think he was out to hurt anyone. I'm sure you've all seen the very silly, well, Pickford should be banned retrospectively or should be banned for as long as Van Dijk's out, or like sports doesn't work that way. I mean, life doesn't work that way. And, you know, all these guys go into these games knowing that injury is a part of the sport and it happened. And I certainly am not rooting for bad players, for good players or great players like Van Dijk to be injured, but let's be honest. And I know we're over a minute, well over a minute, but Liverpool have existed in this heavenly world where everything has gone their way. Every call, every break, complete lack of major injuries now for several years. Let them experience what it's like to be any other club in the Premier League for a little bit. They can hack it. I don't know if their fans can hack it, but they will find a way. They've got plenty of money. They'll figure it out like everyone else has had to, but I don't feel sorry for them at all because this is the kind of thing that happens in sport. But yeah, super eventful game. A lot of weird narratives and stories coming from it, but bottom line, glad we got out of it with a draw.
Yeah, one of my buddies is a Red. And so he was telling me.
Existence
I
just kidding.
I give him a big old hug every time I see him. Like, hope you're okay, man. But he was saying, you know, at first he was talking about, you know, the challenge and everything. And finally, like, it took me a while after prodding him and kind of being like, look, you know, your team's committed a lot of unpunished red card worthy challenges. You have. So I'm cool with y'all being pissed about it because I think it should have been a red card. They tried to explain it on, you know, it's just a red card worthy challenge, period. I think that's, for me, that's the case. It is up to opinions though. That's true.
Sure.
Okay. It is. And that's, at least, it's not one of those things where, hey, that has to be called like that because this action happened. No. But when I finally
but your gripes him, with the officiating, not with Everton.
You yes, know I mean? exactly. But finally, when I got him to loosen up about that, he said, in all honesty, he said, Pickford's hit a stretch of not great form, and he's feeling like he needs to do certain things to try to make the big save. And I was like, yes, that right there, that's like, that's some sense. I think that's a sensible thing to say. And that's actually taking it from the guy's point of view. He's not out to hurt Van Dijk. I think he's trying to get big to try to block a ball he can't see.
Right.
You know, I think he lost sight of the ball and instead he was just kind of like trying to get big to try to make sure there was no goal coming through. To me, that's the simplest explanation. But you know, if you're a Red and you didn't listen to me and you still watched, first of all, that's messed up. But secondly, you know, you've earned a little ire, go ahead, but keep it in perspective. A little self-awareness, you know, may help. Just saying.
Well, and by the way, if Pickford comes in with that tackle and gets the ball, then it's just a great tackle and an unfortunate result. You know, we just experienced a year ago a Spurs player literally getting mad at Andre Gomez, chasing him down and tripping him from behind, and it resulted in him breaking a leg. Yeah. And the media within an hour were worried about the emotional state of Son from Spurs and were worried and were already talking about how that red card would need to be rescinded as quickly as possible. I mean, what world are we living in here? I mean, give me a break. You're just not going to get me to feel whatever I, you know, and by the way, just, you know, for those of you who've been following Everton for a little while and you're still kind of figuring out the dynamic with our rivals across the park, just know that there's literally nothing that could have happened in regards to Pickford being sent off or suspended that would have changed their react. Like, they'd still be mad about something, you know, they'd they're threatening him and his wife on Instagram, guys.
Yeah.
If you think that if Pickford had been red carded or given a 3-game ban because of that, that they would have been like, oh, okay, now justice has been done and I'm not going to harass this guy. No, they would have said, you still, you know, basically killed our player. I mean, they're treating it like there's a funeral procession for Van Dyke out there. Like, nothing will make them happy. And when I say them, I'm talking about their most extreme versions,
right,
you know, versions of their fans, not all of them. Believe me, they're definitely factions of the Everton fandom that are pretty scary too at times. But, you know, like, I think to your point, Jerry, right, everyone has to just take a step back and realize that in sports, I mean, you know, we're all watching an NFL season right now that every week is just littered with season ending injuries. I mean, this is just the way a contact sport works, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, we go on. And by the way, I wouldn't have had a problem with Pickford being out for a few games isn't any skin off of our back. If anything, I think that probably helps Everton a little bit, and he could probably use a break. And it would have been a nice excuse to bench him for a little bit. But, you know, I still think he's on a knife's edge with Carlo. I think Carlo has been trying to big him up as much as possible, but we can't keep going like this. He can't keep – he's got to have – several weeks in a row of just very, you know, solid, blasé, uneventful performances. That's what we need from him.
Yeah.
We, you know, more than anything else. But you can't live your defense is, you know, you can't have defensive players who are constantly in the back of their mind thinking, what is the guy behind me thinking right now? What's he going to do? It's like a ticking time bomb. So, you know, we'll see.
Very much so. Yeah. It's this one. Yeah, this one was one of those that it's been a fairly hot topic. I guess, yeah, a little perspective is what I would say.
Yeah,
have a little perspective, just a little slice of it. Just this is sport, and I get the need to want to blame. I get that you want to blame, and you want like some form of what you consider justice. You know, I get that. It's just welcome to life. Life is just not like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, anyway, sorry. This would become a very different podcast. I'm just saying. This would become a very different show. All right? Anyway, so last thing.
Yeah.
Godfrey. Hey.
Hey.
I should have mentioned him earlier. He wasn't listed as the talking points. And then I was like, oh, yeah, he played out of position.
Yeah.
And he
he's versatile.
He really is versatile. It was nice to see that, to see actually in action, you know.
I have some very you know, most of my Everton friends are way smarter about football than me, and Everton than me, but I've had some of them argue that he's even better as a holding midfielder.
I've heard that.
But you see him out there. He's so big. I think he probably has to be a center half. But, you know, who knows? The bottom line is that
so much
it's
speed.
Nice to – yeah, he's got speed. He's got – he can pick out a pass. I think he's already probably coming in and already just a really advanced level passer. And look, I think that when you're buying younger players like that to develop, don't – worry so much about is he this exact position. If he's good, then that's wonderful. You can develop him, and right now, honestly, he's exactly what we need. I think Seamus Coleman has had a surprisingly good start to the season, but Seamus Coleman has a lot of miles on those weeks. You know what I mean? He is you know, I think he's about to, he's 32, I believe. But I mean, he's a hard 32 in that league. Yeah. He's had some big injuries and he's just played a lot of games. And you know, I have no problem with him starting at this point if he's going to play as well as he's played. But you just have to have cover. You have to have good cover behind guys at that age, especially. You should have it at every position, but especially those kind of players. And, you know, Godfrey right now represents depth at multiple positions, and that's what's so exciting. I would rather see him play right back than Jonjo Kenny, frankly. And, you know, if I would argue that with the Coleman going off in the Derby like he did, I talked about this with Dave this morning. I think, you know, Godfrey gives you the luxury of not having to rush Seamus Coleman back. Let Seamus Coleman rest another week. You need to manage. It's like we see in a lot of sports, you know, in the NBA, they have load management or whatever. Like you gotta manage minutes of older players to get the best out of them. And I think that with Godfrey, you can give him a start in, you know, the center of defense or at right back, or, you know, if you wanted to, you know, like for instance, if Gomes and Sigurdsson were both having injuries and you wanted to kind of play with it, you could say, we're going to move Allen and Decore up a little further, and we're going to make Godfrey the holding defensive midfielder in a three or something. I mean, you can do a lot with a guy like that. When you're big and strong and fast and pass well and you're talented, not that he doesn't have plenty of ways to go to develop, but I mean, that's a really versatile, useful piece on a side that really needs it. I think it looks like it's been money well spent, at least the early indications. But for him to come into that game under those circumstances, first time playing, didn't expect to play, you know, all those factors, I thought he played really, really well.
Agreed. Great. He even went forward a couple of times. It's nice to see. Cool. So any other final thoughts on the Derby before we go to the mailbag?
No. Let's go to the mailbag.
All right. So I have not developed any of my answers to these. So
where are these questions?
So these questions are from Reddit. We've actually been harvesting questions from Reddit, from the Everton Redditors and
the dark seedy underworld of Reddit.
they're giving us some good stuff. Some of these I'm not going to be as equipped to answer as I want to. Like they're asking for like possible transfer targets in January, and I got to be honest,
I have no idea.
I'm not. So the very first one, and Portland_Eric is back with a cornucopia of questions here. It's just a lot, which Eric, thank you.
Pick out some good ones.
So he's asking, start off with January right back target. I don't have any right now. I don't.
I
don't have it yet.
If you've got Godfrey and Jonjo Kenny, unless you're selling Jonjo Kenny, they don't need to buy another right back. I think Godfrey addresses that backup at that position right now. And by the way, it'll be interesting if Godfrey ends up playing a few games in a row and he looks really good, then suddenly the conversation becomes, should Godfrey be the guy who's playing at that position? Maybe primarily, I still think he's ultimately a center half, but I just don't know that I think I would rather spend that money on a right-sided attacking player, maybe, as opposed to a right back.
I think the only reason we'll go right back in January, because I think we hate the January window. I think the only reason we'll go January right back would be if we have some really nagging injuries with the players that can possibly play that position. Because we do like to attack.
Like if Coleman can't play or something like that, you know, for an extended period, you probably have to. But
so Portland_Eric, we will pick. We need to. If you can re-ask that question, like in December, okay? Maybe we'll have more of a clue on that.
I'll come back on in December and I'll have a real thought then, okay?
Yes, we're booking in advance. This is awesome. So next, Portland_Eric asks, do we need to upgrade from Andre Gomes in the midfield? Do we need to upgrade for him?
I think Andre Gomes is still, he struggled like he and Allen both really struggled, I think, on Saturday. I think Gomes, there are times when this season where he's looked really, really good. His passing's been on. He looks like the best version of himself. And then there are other times where he's just so off. And the there's just this wide chasm between he's either really good or really not. And part of that, I think, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but – you know, this is still a guy I think we all need to remember that is less than a year removed from a horribly catastrophic injury. And I think that it's not so much that you need to upgrade. I think that it's more of, you know, he plays and he will be pushed as he is being pushed right now by Gylfi Sigurdsson in that position, who I think there's a decent chance he starts against Southampton. And that's okay. Like, you know, then Andre Gomes has to push in training and, right. you know, to get on the pit. Like, that's the natural course of things. And so I think the bigger question is do you need to upgrade the midfield? And I think right now we've just invested a lot in that area, and I'm not inclined to necessarily say we need to do that anytime that soon, bar injuries, especially with Gbamon, hopefully coming back in November. I think we're going to be okay there. I think the bigger question is does Gomes have a long-term future at the club? I think he's definitely here at least through, you know, given that we just bought him and paid a lot. That's the thing. I think a lot of people are get very into this, like, oh, well, I've been disappointed with him for a few months, so I'm ready to get rid of him. I mean, after Everton paid, I think, 26 million or something for him. I mean, just like, let's, and he's on a pretty healthy contract. Like, the idea that you can just kind of write him off. I mean, we're not rich enough of a club like a Chelsea who can just write off a 70 million pound goalkeeper that sucks and they can just go to someone else. Like, I think with Andre Gomes, you want to give him, guys like him, Alex Iwobi, guys that have maybe not been awesome right from the start. You have to give them opportunities to be the best they can, because you're going to be paying them anyway. So you might as well just retain a little patience for them.
Yeah. I got to agree. You know, I love the idea of having two starters at every position. Why do you have to nail down exactly who's starting, you know, every week? The idea here is we have a squad. Right.
Right.
So Gylfi, when he's been coming in, he's been playing all right. He's had some good games when he comes in. So it could be that competition for the position, frankly, is what is lighting a fire under his ass. And I feel like that's what we needed more for Pickford, is some competition for him to get him to start focusing. That's why I was kind of bummed when we signed, was it Olsen on loan? Because I wasn't completely sure what kind of player we were getting. You know what I mean? I was really in a player that I was more familiar with, I would be able to say, oh, it's going to push him. Yeah, that's great. But with this, I was kind of like, I don't know enough. Will he push him?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, so having two for every position, I just feel like is super positive, at least. And you're talking about that flexibility of the other guys.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, you know, positional flexibility is a good thing for sure.
Yes. So this is a good question. How long of a prison sentence will Pickford get for assaulting VVD?
In reality, he'll get nothing. And should he, I think his crimes against goalkeeping are way worse than his crimes against Virgil van Dijk personally. So in my fictional Alice in Wonderland universe, you know, I'd give Pickford at least 10 years so that by the time he gets out, he could maybe still, you know, play in like, you know, a USL squad somewhere maybe, but not maybe, you know, so he's not totally done, but not play for Everton again. But no, it's all been overblown. I think we've talked about it, and I'm at the point now where I've hit my Pickford overload at this point.
Oh my gosh. I had it before we even got on here, and I was like, we're going to have to talk about him.
Yeah, no, of course. You know? Of course. It'll probably be my last podcast talking about the specifics of the derby, and I think this will be a good opportunity this week to just kind of move on from it, hopefully. And now the focus really just needs to be on him as it has been, you know, on him as a player, and not the specifics of the derby.
So next, where do you want to travel for 2021 Champions League group stages?
Ooh, that's a great question. I like the premise, and I'm with you. My brother reached out to me a few weeks ago and said, if we get in Champions League, we're going. And, you know, of course, I'm hopeful that we have a more sane domestic situation, political situation here in America, one that knows how to competently deal with disease and things like that. And we get a vaccine and, you know, all these caveats aside. But if so, man, Champions League, oh, God, where would I – the place that I've – you know, one of the places I've always – you know, wanted to go to see a game. You know, I'd like to go, of course, to at some point, play, you know, see a game at Barcelona or Real Madrid, like one of the traditional Spanish stadiums. But I'd also really, I've always wanted to, even though it kind of scares me a little bit, I've always wanted to go see an Italian game, like a game at one of the old historical Italian venues, just because that's just a different experience, a different cultural experience. And I've been to Italy and the food's fantastic. And so I would relish Peronis and Carlo Ancelotti leading us into Champions League glory in Italy. I think that'd be great. So maybe Juventus or Roma or something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Yeah.
See, what's funny is you were thinking about these like stadiums, these, you know, epic stadiums and these storied clubs. And I was like, I just want to go to Prague. Prague. Because it looks awesome.
Yes, it does look awesome. I'm totally down for that. I'd love to have that problem of like, which cool European city do you want to go?
Right?
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. So next, let's see if I can actually read this. Victor Bostovich asks, are Liverpool fans just bitter because we're going to go unbeaten all season whilst they failed to? Victor, I will give you an answer to that right now. Yes, that is the answer.
That's the answer.
There's no other. That's exactly why.
Yep, I have nothing more to add to that.
Yes, thank you for your support, Liverpool fans. Apartment Bubbly 3810 asks, what leaps higher, Tim Cahill or a kangaroo on a pogo stick?
Calvert-Lewin.
Calvert-Lewin, it's option C. It's option C.
No, honestly, Cahill's incredible.
I got to say Cahill.
Yeah, but I don't know. I tend to think it's sort of like, as take any great athlete, you know, you can take Jordan or whatever, and then compare it to something like an actual kangaroo or something like that, and the animal almost always wins.
Well, I just worry about the kangaroo spraining its ankle, messing around on the pogo stick. I'm just saying, I worry.
I would feel unsafe on a pogo stick, much less I wouldn't imagine how one of them would feel on a pogo stick for sure. Yeah, it seems like, yeah, animal cruelty on some level.
So I think this is a great question. Ben Jarmin asks, with Richarlison being suspended, who now has the biggest opportunity to fill in and make their mark?
Alex Iwobi.
It's my answer too. I agree. Very cool.
I mean, Anthony Gordon, I think, will finally start making the bench. I think he's an exciting talent. But Iwobi is, again, kind of like we were talking about Oliver Gomez, he's a guy that we paid a lot of money for, and regardless of how you feel about him, it is incumbent upon us as a club to utilize our existing resources, develop them into better players, as opposed to constantly seeking to throw more, you know, good money after bad. I mean, because we're already in financial fair play, you know, kind of gray area as it is. Look, Alex Iwobi, I think has been pretty good this season when he's been called upon for the most part. Better, I think, than what we saw last season. And again, I think that there's just this pervasive excitement and attitude about being part of the squad that they want to play. They want to be part of the solution and not the problem. You know, they seem to all, like, you know, even in the League Cup games, you know, Iwobi and Bernard and those guys coming in and just being like, man, they looked excited to play. They looked like they wanted to impress. And that just fundamental shift in attitude has been huge. And I think this is a real opportunity for Iwobi to make his mark here and to become part of the thought process. You know, obviously when Richarlison's back, he starts, but Iwobi can put himself up there as someone who becomes a really valuable part of this squad, a guy who can come off the bench and really contribute. He's got the skill. It's the consistency that he lacks. And so I'd love to see him do it, but he's going to have three games. I think he's going to have, unless he just absolutely is terrible, I think he's going to have three straight starts, while Richarlison is out.
Yeah. And, it's interesting. He's been getting an opportunity more this season to cut in from the outside, which is where I feel like he's always been more dangerous. When he's cutting in, rather than being asked to be a winger who's
right
dribbling down to the line, going to the corner and crossing, I feel like it's not his game at all. You know, cutting in and almost being a number 10 coming in from the wing, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
The
way he and Bernard are both better in those roles than they are as pure wingers. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I will say one of my favorite non-goal highlights was that crazy little back heel skill move he did in the derby, you know, splitting the defenders. And then he just gets brought down by Robertson because he had been left. It was just a cool moment. It was nice. I was like, yeah, some confidence from him. That was cool.
Yeah,
you know, good for him.
He's got those moves, no question.
So, okay. There's a couple other mailbag questions, but they have to do with stuff we've already covered. So I'm going to put the mailbag away, put it back under my bed. Okay. Moving on, Southampton preview for this weekend. Current form, Southampton's 11th in the Premier League, 2-1-2. They have 7 points. Their recent results are honestly, they're okay. 3-3 draw with Chelsea, 2-0 win over West Brom, and a 1-0 win over Burnley. When you're thinking Southampton, and of course, Walcott's on loan there, can't play against us though. So there you go. But I think you got to think Danny Ings. I think he's the leading goal scorer this season in the Premier League. He's got 4. Che Adams has got 2 assists. I think they're running with 2 strikers often. So there's that. And honestly, a player that I've always admired is James Ward-Prowse in terms of just playing dangerous balls into the box. I just feel like he's a really good passer. You know, he's a good set-piece specialist. So I think lineup-wise, you could see McCarthy, Bertrand, Vestergaard, Bednarik, Walker Peters, Oriol Romeu, James Ward-Prowse, Redmond, who also usually plays well against us. That's another, you know, another player usually does well. I don't know who's going to be their right wing because I think Armstrong may be a doubt to play. I'm not completely sure. So I'm not sure. This is me. I don't watch Southampton every week. And now I've lost all credibility, sadly. So I'm not sure who's going to be their right wing. Let's just say it's going to be Rob. Danny Ings and Adams up top. And yeah, so who do you think is going to be starting for us is the question, I reckon.
Yeah, no, I think that I think we've had a relatively settled side for the most part this season. I think there's a decent chance that Sigurdsson starts for Gomes along with Allen and Doucouré this time. Just because I think Sigurdsson has kind of been pushing and is probably, you know, Gomes got brought off and I think he maybe has kind of earned it. We'll see. I'm not totally sure. We'll see. But otherwise, I think then you've got Iwobi in place of Richarlison, of course, Calvert-Lewin up top and Rodriguez on the right. And then as far as the back four goes, obviously, you know, Dean, you always pencil Dean in first, if he's fit. So you've got Dean, I would say Keane, Mina, and then I have a sneaky feeling that they're going to try to give Coleman a little more time to recover. You know, he was injured and then we had the 2-week break and he still didn't quite look like himself. So I think now with the way Godfrey played on Saturday, they've got the luxury, as I said before, to not rush him back into that. So I'm hopeful, obviously, that, I didn't see anything that made me think that Mina's dealing with anything beyond just kind of the normal soreness of what he's been recovering from. And they've been kind of trying to manage his minutes and only play him once a week and those sorts of things. But so I would assume the back four is going to be Keane, Mina, Godfrey and Dean. And then, I think Pickford is still going to start, but I think this is a hugely important game for him. Southampton are always the side. I think they've got a really a good manager in Hasenhüttl. And I think that they get the most out of the talent they generally have most of the time. Bottom line though, and Danny Ings always scores against us, but bottom line, we're in an environment where there is not really a distinct home field advantage, if you will, with no fans. So I think a lot of times it really just comes down to
you know, which side's better, which side's going to execute better. And, you know, talent wise, I mean, we should expect to go into a game like this. We should expect to win. And we've had the attitude that we can go on the road and play, not only play with, but beat Spurs, beat Palace.
Yeah.
Two very good sides who frankly have been better up to this point in the season than Southampton. And so I expect us to go in there. The expectation is that we win. You know, I'm not saying that definitely means we will, but my expectation is that we do. Assuming that most of our key guys are fit, even with the loss of Richarlison,
right,
which will be a big loss, yeah, but we can. Definitely. I think we can handle it.
Yeah. This is usually, it usually proves to be a tricky fixture, you know, every year. I feel like it's never like a layup at home or away. You know what I mean? I feel like it can be difficult either one. You never know.
Yeah.
Which one? But I honestly, though, I don't really as much concern myself with past results as much with this team, with this year's squad. I just don't.
Yeah, they seem a very different, given that they had their midfield completely replaced and the addition of James Rodriguez, the entire personality and belief of this group feels so different than years past that comparing it to past years is probably, you know, you're history can inform you a little bit, but I think we're talking about, you know, a very different group of players in general. Southampton, I think, are, you know, quality enough to certainly beat us, but I think that's true of most games we're going to play this season with any team. The bottom line being that I think this, I look at this and I think this is a squad that we're better than and we should win this game. And that's pretty much it.
So, really quick final score prediction.
Ings will score. I mean, it's written into law. It's death and taxes that Ings will score. But I'm feeling 3-1 Everton. I'm feeling pretty good that we will have some guys bounce back from their performances against Liverpool. And, you know, I just don't think you can really slow down this James Calvert-Lewin train that's going right now. It'll be really incumbent upon Iwobi to be a good contributor in this game as well. But honestly, I think he can. I think that he's the kind of player that being surrounded by all these other players who are talented and playing well will help him. I think if you get Sigurdsson in there, you might get you know, if he's up for it, which, you know, I'm still trying to emotionally work through forgiving him for his terrible season last season. But if he's up for it, he certainly, you suddenly have a lot of skill out there in terms of passing the ball. And I think Everton could really control the ball and control the game. They just have to do that thing that they did for most of the season and just create a lot of chances and then you'll score more. That's my deep sports metrics analysis of Everton.
So, nice. What do you get with that? So I'm going to deny the easy money. I am going to say that Ings is not going to score, even though he always has, only because I don't like him. And I want it to stop. I want this to stop.
Believe me, if that's all it took, he would have stopped scoring a long time ago.
I'm keeping the faith. I'm going to say 2-0. I think no amount of Ings just being absolutely intolerable is, I'm just going to say he's not going to get a goal this time. There we go.
All right.
Yes. So I reckon that's it, man. We have totally gone through everything Everton at the moment that we can.
Solved all the world's Everton problems.
Yes. It's you know, it's nice to feel at peace. Sure. Now I can sleep. I just want to really quickly want to thank you, Rob. It's nice to meet you on here. Thanks for coming on. Rob, there's, do you have anything? I mean, honestly, do you have anything you want to plug? I mean, besides the Blue Room being like awesome.
I would say if you have not just been totally turned off by my performance on this thing, and you want to follow me on Twitter, you can. I'm at the Rob Vera, which sounds really cocky, but Rob Vera was taken back when I started getting on Twitter back in the day. So it's the Rob Vera, which sounds really arrogant, but That's my Twitter handle. Hey, if you need an hour of nostalgic music escapism on Saturday nights, 11 Eastern, 10 Central time, you can go to kosu.org or thespyfm.com, either one. And my local Oklahoma City music show is playing every Saturday night. And awesome. It's always good music. And so there you go. Those are my plugs.
Very cool. So I will plug our stuff. So
it's called Turn of the Century, by the way, is the name of the show. I should probably say the name of the show. That would probably be, so I'm not very good. You can tell I don't plug my own stuff that, you know, nearly enough in actual conversational form. It's everything's on Twitter. So
I mean, I have forgotten to plug my own personal stuff on this show. Like even last week, I forgot. It's like I always remember Toffee Blue stuff, but I never remember my own personal thing. So yeah, make sure you're checking out for all you people out there. Make sure you subscribe to the Toffee Blues if you haven't already. A lot of really good content from some cool contributors that also you see on this channel often. They're there, but they also write content for the Toffee Blues website. So check them out all there. Follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. So anyway, that's the Toffee Blues plugging. Also, with Christmas coming up, if you're like, gosh, I would like a book about a kid or a moose who like wants to learn to run and stuff, I've written a book, a children's book, and it's so if you're interested in Randolph the Christmas Moose, the concept was birthed on the Toffee Blues podcast. the most insane thing, crazy story, and then me, and I'm the actual idiot that decided to make it a reality. So yeah, check that out. It's a nice story of being your own moose.
Nice.
So yeah, anyway, so that's it. I guess we're ready to roll. Thanks so much, Rob. Really appreciate it. And yeah. I guess we'll go ahead and peace out. For everybody else out there, let's have a good one this weekend. Let's get 3 points and let's keep this unbeaten top of the table train rolling. All right. Bye.